ओम शांति. So when asked what topic I might take up, I chose this topic of managing power because, as you may know or not, I've been talking about power every day for the last 2 years. I'm living in India, working on the project, The Future of Power. So every day I'm talking about power. And also reading what I can on power. So I find it very interesting because people generally don't talk about power. Powers seem to be quite negative. When we use the word power, often people say, "What do you mean by power?" And it's a bit like this, because mostly, when we think about power or hear this word power, we relate it to power over. You know, having power over someone. So it's tended to take on quite a negative connotation. So what I'm talking about is generally people, when they think about power, they think only of power over and being kind of manipulated and overpowered. But you might want to just consider a spectrum where on one side there's my power, where I have power over others because I only think of my power. So that's one side. The other side is your power, where we give up our power. And interestingly, for example, women have only started to claim their power in the last 50, 60 years, right? For thousands of years, women allowed themselves to, they handed over the power. Interesting, isn't it? And very often we are doing that in our life. We hand over our power. And so what we will explore today is a little bit of these two sides of the spectrum: power over, my power, and power to, your power. And of course, the sweetest spot is in the middle, where it's my power and your power. And that's what we all like to, I think, achieve. So just to keep that in mind, and just to think for yourself, where are you on that spectrum? And when we talk about power over, one of the interesting things that was quoted, because I pick up all kinds of things on power, and one of the quotes was that one of the most, the strongest kind of power over is not to see someone. Not to recognize, not to see that person, not to acknowledge. And it was interesting because last night we were just talking about this, how respect is really to see the other person. Not the body, of course, but to see, to acknowledge, to respect the existence and the needs and whatever else of another person. But the most extreme is this not even acknowledging. And I think you know a little bit about the history of Australia, because I'm from Australia. But I don't know if you know that when the white settlers went into Australia, they declared that there's no people living here. There were thousands of Aboriginal people, but they said, there's people living here, so we can take this land. And it was only, I think, what did I read? Something like, maybe some Australians can help me, but not long ago, 77 or something like that, when it was acknowledged that actually there were custodians of the land. But for so long, there was this kind of abusive attitude, even if people don't, even we might not practice abuse in a kind of overt way, but it's a very good thing to check, do I really see each and every soul and acknowledge each and every soul? Because without realizing it, I can be having power over others and hurting others. Another thing that's been talked about is the balance of love and power. But maybe before we go into that, just a few definitions of power, because when we ask people what is power, it also seems to be that people aren't very clear what actually is power. And so some of the definitions in our Future of Power dialogue that have come out, one is that power is to achieve one's purpose, the ability to achieve one's purpose. Power is to influence. The one I prefer is power is the ability to mobilize resources to meet needs. So power is the ability to use resources to meet needs. And why I particularly feel that one is good for the project is because, you know, it can be used on an external level or also on an internal level, because my power is my ability to use resources. So it could be gyan, yoga, dharana, but using resources to meet my needs. And so what we're always trying to do, I think, is to at least maintain enough power to function, you know. So we're always trying to, you know, draw on these resources to meet our needs. And so this is why, you know, of course, for BKs, we probably have more discussion and talk about power than anyone else because of the eight powers. So we are very aware of these tools, and as Baba says, it's a matter of using the right tool at the right time. And if we use the wrong tool, then it's not going to be effective. It can actually have a very negative outcome. So power, for me, what I like is this definition is power is my ability to use resources to meet needs. So even in service we need resources. So whether it's external or whether it's internal, I think this for me is a very good working definition of power. When we came to Baba, and maybe some of us are still at that level, of course, I think most of our attention was on having enough power not to be influenced by others. So one other definition is power is the ability to influence. But I think where we start actually is probably at the level where we're trying not to be influenced. Not to be influenced by an atmosphere, by someone's negativity, so many things, so many influences that we have to live amongst. So we probably started at that level, but it's probably time, if we haven't already got to that, is to not just not be influenced, but to influence. And this year, in particular, we're looking at the message. What is the message? How to reveal Baba? And of course, we are the message. More than anything else, we are the message. So how much can I influence others by my attitude, by my positivity, by my love? How much am I able to influence an atmosphere, you know, a situation, in a positive way. So coming back to this thing of power and love, so this is the balance that we need to achieve. And most of us will find that it's quite tricky. And somebody said very well that actually we don't use power and love at the same time. In a sense, it's like walking and keeping a balance. So the two legs are love and power. But it's like when we're using power, we have to remember love. We can't forget our other leg. So in the same way, when we're using love, not to forget power. Because love without power is sentimental. It can even sometimes be a loss. Because if there's no power in the love, then it often goes into those other things that we call attachment and all of those things. So balancing power and love is like walking, and we always have to keep this kind of dynamic balance. And what another person said is now we have immoral power, but we also seem to have powerless morals, right? So often we have powerless morals. When it's just preaching, when it's just kind of words, we might spout a lot of, you know, good words, but how much is there really power in the morals? And that also is a very interesting thing to see, that we have immoral power, but on the other hand, powerless morals. And in particular, probably, you know, we are very responsible for that side of making the morals more powerful, which is, of course, by our practical example. And another thing that somebody said, you know, because when I go to meet people, I always talk to them about power to see what they understand. And what this project is about, it's about, how many know about the future of power? Okay, very few. So this was started by Brother Nizar from Nairobi, Africa. And it's in response to Baba's mulis, where Baba has said that the main role of the double foreigners is to what? What's the main role? Even about a month ago, there was the same muli, 1975, and Baba was saying, yes, you're opening centers, you're holding programs, it's all very good, but this is 1975 when there are hardly a handful of double foreigners. But our main task is, brothers going. Yeah, so what Baba says is to awaken the Kumbhakarnas of India. And this is quite, sometimes I feel embarrassed, you know, when I say this, because it can seem like, who are we to come into India and awaken all these Kumbhakarnas? But to me, what it means, and especially now it seems to have more relevance, because India is becoming economically strong. And more, it is looking to the West, to those models. And so for, you know, people from outside of India to come to India and say, wow, your values are what the world needs. This is what we need now, this kind of spirituality and values. So this is what it means to me, and this is how we're using it in the future of power. But also using one particular word, and that is soft power. Because when India was a world power, and as we know, that was for thousands of years, it had very soft power, meaning spirituality, values, sustainable lifestyle. This is what India, Bharat, had, soft power. And power is almost like held by countries for a certain time. So we call it, like, certain countries become custodians of power. So power went from India to Egypt, to Rome, to China, to Great Britain, and now it's basically in America. And so what we're talking about when we go to meet people about this future of power is this very historic moment where power is now coming back from the West to the East. And when we started to talk about this in 2009, especially in India, people were saying, what? And, you know, they weren't kind of very aware. But now it's pretty obvious, and there's so many books and articles written on this. It's not a question anymore. But everyone's looking at two countries, China and India. It was interesting because from what I've spoken to kind of financial people in India, like financial secretaries and that level, they say India's 25 years behind China. So then I say to them, then why are everyone looking at India? Why not just China? And I say to them, which, you know, it's open for discussion, right? But I say to them, perhaps people want to see a different kind of power, soft power. And what we're doing in bringing these leaders, because we bring the top leaders from all fields together, to talk about whether India can show a new kind of leadership using soft power, not hard power, the gun, money, position, force, but soft power. Can bring back the soft power. So of course it's quite aligned with Gyan, because India will be the future power. We know that. It will be. That's, you know, something that we know. But it's kind of bringing people, and especially leaders, back to this thinking of soft power. And what is very nice from my perspective is whenever I talk about soft power to any Indians, whether it's leaders or any Indians, it touches something inside. They resonate so much with this idea of soft power. It's in the DNA, I would say. Of course, there's a few that are quite different to that, but in general, there's such a belief also. Because we might talk about soft power to people in other countries, and they might think it's very nice. But what's interesting is when I meet all of these leaders, I say, do you think, you know, we can run a nation just on soft power? And they all say, yes, yes, why not? Whereas I think in most countries, they would think, well, it's very idealistic, you know, but there's such a faith in soft power because people see so much of it. And of course, Gandhi modeled such a great power around, you know, non-violence and all of these things. And, you know, living in India, I do see a lot of this soft power. And I see things that, you know, maybe in India people don't notice so much because they're so used to it. But when I was in Delhi last year, it was, I think, May or June, it was extremely hot, and I saw thousands of people walking from Delhi to Haridwar. Delhi to Haridwar, I don't know how many kilometers it is, but it takes several days in the heat. And not only that, people all on the roads feeding them and giving them shelter at night. I mean, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? How many places would you still find that kind of renunciation and intensity to achieve something? And that's just one. I mean, I see these things kind of all the time and hear about them, but there's this kind of a self-discipline and renunciation that I don't think I could imagine. I don't know about you, but you know, there's a lot of this strength still here. And so when we're, you know, when I'm talking, let me talk from my personal experience, when I'm talking to the people of India about soft power, I mean, I can see it. I can see it in so many different ways all around, just living here. I just see it. Of course, there's the corruption and all of those as well, and so I've educated myself a little bit around that as well, because I don't want to be too naive and kind of think, oh, it's all just wonderful. It's certainly not. So there is, you know, this real dark side, but for the most part, you can see so much of this kind of soft power happening in all around, and just living in the centers, you know, I see it in the centers, and I've been able to go with the sisters to prisons and, you know, all kinds of places, different villages and different places where they go and serve. And a very nice experience of soft power that I had in the prison with a sister called Nandini from Ahmedabad. And what I've, you know, I learned Hindi from Baba. I learned from the Moolis, because when I came to Gyan, Baba used to come every 2 or 3 days. So, and stay until 3 or 4 in the morning, sometimes later. So I used to listen with one headphone up and one down. And of course Baba speaks so slowly that I was able to catch a lot. And then I learned to read and write, and then I used to study Moolis every morning after Hindi Moolis after Amrit Vela. So since I've come to India, I've also been reading the Moolis in the center in Hindi, which surprised me. And they can understand. I have an accent, but they said they understand. So when I was in Ahmedabad, I read the Mooli to the prisoners. Can you imagine, you know? It was quite beautiful. And we have a center in this prison. And they have daily Mooli, they have a cassette player. It looks exactly like this. A table with a white cloth, flowers, and someone playing music, and the Moolis there. Sisters go from different centers every day to read the Mooli. And when I was there, the sister, Nandini, she asked the class, there must be about 50 or 60 in the class as well, and she asked the class, who missed class yesterday? And a few put up their hand, and she said, come to the front. And she got me, we had fresh flowers, which was very nice, she got me to give them all a flower. She said, maybe you need more power. So it was a very sweet example of soft power. You know, when instead of saying, oh, why did you miss, you shouldn't miss, it was like, let me give you something to encourage you, to empower you. And so, like that, you know, from this one, from that one, from so many, you know, we learn this this beautiful softness. That's what I'm taking anyway. And so we always have this opportunity to practice soft power. And it's a choice whether we're going to use soft power or hard power. It's a choice at every moment. But again, going back to this balance of love and power, of course we need both. So we need to always kind of be aware of this balance. Because, you know, as I was saying, if there's only love, what it's described as is anemic. You know, it's kind of sentimental and anemic. And now love has kind of been used more for romance than anything else, right? When people hear the word love, It's usually romance that most people think about. And so this is how we've really lost the power of love. Because romance, I mean, that's quite a movement away from power. And Daddy Prashmani once said, only a powerful soul can love. And what my kind of definition of love is that love is to kind of extend myself, you know, to extend myself for your growth or for my growth. So if I extend myself, if I want to extend myself, I need to be powerful. But most of us, even in the name of love, we only include people in our circle that we like, that we get along with, maybe they're similar to us. And so you can ask yourself, how big is your circle? And going back to that thing, that the main kind of abuse or power over is not to see someone. And I think we all do that. We all tend to select a few and bring them close and kind of not even see the rest. But love is inclusive. And so if we're going to practice the kind of love that Dadiji practiced, and that we saw the other day, I don't know about you, but when we were watching that screen of the Drishti, you know, before we saw Dadi Gulzar, but that screen and the incredible, at least I felt, incredible love in Dadi's, in Bap Dada's Drishti, in Bap Dada's Drishti, I don't think you would ever see that anywhere else. So when I was thinking of what's the message and how to reveal Baba, I was thinking, well, you know, that really shows something that I think nobody in the world would ever see anywhere else. Did you feel that? Did you see that? Yeah? It was so powerful. So this is the kind of love that we're talking about, not romantic love. Because like Scott Peck says, you know, even a lazy person can fall in love. It doesn't take any effort to fall in love, but to love takes, you know, I have to stretch myself to be inclusive, to really love. And another definition of love is to, is recognition. So again, going back to that abuse, love is recognition. So if I don't recognize you, then I'm not practicing love, and I'm probably, you know, even in a mild way, abusing you, because we don't mean to not recognize people, but, you know, it's something I think we need to include as a kind of a soul conscious practice, because it is soul conscious to see the soul, and even the greeting in India. You know, I bow to the light in you. I respect, you know, the being in you. That's what it's all about. But how many really do it with that kind of acknowledgement? And even when we say Om Shanti, to what extent do we really have that acknowledgement? And I remember one time coming to Madhuban, and as usual, everyone says, Om Shanti, Om Shanti, Om Shanti. You know, you kind of go through this. But I remember in particular, Sister Mohini looking at me completely and saying, Om Shanti. Absolutely connected. You know, and this is really what I think soul consciousness is. And I found it was an amazing example and lesson, because she didn't take any longer than anyone else. It didn't take anything more except awareness. Awareness and recognition. And at that time I was living in Hong Kong, and if you try to talk to anyone in Hong Kong on the street, well, just forget it. It's so noisy, you can't hear each other. So when we meet on the street, Usually there's no chance for conversation, so I would take this from Sister Mohini and just feel, you know, let me just connect with this person. So you can just say hello with a full connection, and it just goes to the heart, you know. So this is the kind of recognition that we talk about in soul consciousness, and just a few ways that we can practice it, just by being conscious, by being aware. And of course we have, you know, when we're, you know, thinking about the kinds of powers that we have, what kind of power do we have, thinking of it as Brahmins? What are all our kinds of power that Lokic people would probably never think of? And one thing that was very interesting, when we did the Future of Power dialogue in Pune, the biggest kind of aha that most people had was to realize that power is within. And I thought, because, you know, people in India are so spiritual, that would be kind of something that everyone knew. But not at all. And probably one of the reasons is because, you know, especially when there's bhakti, we tend to look at power outside. You know, we ask for power, we want power, we look for power. And the big kind of aha that everyone had there was, we never realize power's within. And of course, to us as Brahmins, this is our starting point, isn't it? You know, I mean, we just think everybody kind of knows that now, because it's kind of become so obvious to us. But this inner power is one thing. But then, of course, yoga, you know, the connection, that kind of power. And Bob was also asking this morning, how much yoga do we have? Do you have, and I was upstairs, so Didi Nirmala was asking us, you know, how many hours yoga do you have a day? 2 hours? Who has 2 hours yoga a day? How many feel that they really don't know how many hours of yoga they have a day? Because it's so slippery, isn't it? And also, we don't know exactly what Baba means by yoga. Because sometimes he says, just by, you know, being aware and really feeling that Baba's speaking the Muli, it's yoga. You know, and then Baba talks about accurate yoga. And what is that? So, you know, and then 1 minute we have yoga and the next minute it's gone. So it's quite a slippery thing to try to measure. But I think one measure that we can usually kind of use for ourselves is how much power we have. Because I know for myself, if I'm not remembering Baba, I have no power. Amrit Vela's pretty useless. And my tolerance goes down. You know, when we're not remembering Baba, I think we can see that. Is it right? We can see when we're connected and we're not connected. And we also have all had those times where, you know, somehow we've been able to get into a really, you know, good state, and it's like a superpower. It's like we feel, you know, we feel like we can exist on 3-4 hours sleep, but it's not something that we do all the time. It's almost like, I don't know if it's Baba's gift to us that we get some of those days or months or weeks or moments, or whether we've made the effort for it, but we all know it. And one thing that, you know, brain scientists are still saying, you know, I don't know, we hear this and yet we don't do much about it, that we only use 5% of our brain's capacity. And the soul has to use the brain, right? The soul uses the brain. So, you know, there's definitely a connection. So if we're saying we only use 5% of our brain's capacity, Meaning, you know, what they say is, you know, mostly, for example, one example is that we think about the past. You know, in fact, they say we probably, for most people, hopefully not us, 90% of the thoughts they have today, they had the same thoughts yesterday. And you can ask yourself, what's your percentage? Can you work it out? And if we had those thoughts yesterday, we probably had the same thoughts for the last 10, 20 years. So how much we're kind of stuck in old thinking. And we have the tools. We have the tools to move forward. You know, we have the tools and we have so many ways to be creative. You know, we learn creativity. That's what meditation is, creativity. And even yoga, we need usually creativity. We need to, you know, experiment with different relationships, you know, have different practices, sometimes the bodiless stage, sometimes seed stage, soul consciousness. You know, we have all these different stages, avyak stage. And so, you know, it really loosens our brain when we are creative and do, you know, real kind of experimentation, which is what Baba's been, at least I've been hearing for the last week, Baba using this word experimentation with yoga. So we have new experiences. And one time somebody got very technical with Dadi Gulzar and was saying, well, what's the difference between the seed stage and the bodiless stage and soul consciousness? And Dadi Gulzar was so simple, as she usually is. She said, don't worry, it's all just potatoes. But she said, we need potatoes cooked in a different way. If you eat boiled potatoes every day, will you enjoy it? So maybe there's not much difference, you know, with these, between these stages, but they definitely have a different flavor. Is that right? Seed stage is a very, very different flavor to bodiless stage. And that's what, you know, we need to do in our experimentation, be creative to experience all these stages of meditation in a very distinct and flavorsome, really in a flavorsome way, that we really get like a sweetness, a joy, a newness, something coming from that experience. And so we have so many wonderful teachings and methods and practices Baba's been giving us for 75 years. So we've got so many materials that we can use to shift out of this kind of stuck, kind of stayed state that we sometimes, you know, even as yogis find ourselves in. We don't get newness. And why not? Why not? Why don't we get newness in our experiences? Why not? And probably one big word is laziness. You know, we're just not, you know, like we need to move to exercise, we also need to move inside to develop ourselves. Otherwise we just stay. And the thing is, you know, you don't notice so much when you're exercising the benefit that you get, but when you stop doing it, you quickly see what happens. So in the same way, if we're not exercising our brain, not exercising ourselves to be creative, then we're not going to have power, because we're just kind of, I don't know, vegetating almost. Vegetating yogis of just kind of not really moving. And so Baba's been emphasizing this thing of experimentation. And that's what gives us power. Because when we start to experiment, we feel alive. And when we're alive, we feel energetic. And energy is almost, I guess, synonymous with this word power. You know, you could probably almost replace it with energy. There's also another kind of, a very popular book that was out, that's been out for many years, talking about the difference between power and force. You know? So force is that power over. So when we're being abusive, when we're influencing, you know, like in a manipulative way, then we're using force. And when we use force, it's not power, because it doesn't have a life of its own. If you stop applying that pressure, that force, the other side will just stop. Whereas when we empower, the other will keep moving. We don't have to keep applying any energy from our side. The other side will start moving and growing, and that's why, you know, this love power has a very close connection, as you can see. Because when I extend myself for your growth, it's empowering you, but also empowering me. So they're very closely connected, but of course we have to be aware that we're using both legs and not just one. Another interesting discussion came up about how power becomes abusive. And one of the ways it becomes abusive is because when we want to be self-aware, and probably to use that word self-actualize, when I want to come into my power, you know, I'm quite excited and I kind of feel motivated and I'm moving, right? I'm moving. But what often happens is when we start moving, if you're in the way, maybe I think, well, my self-actualization is very important. So if you're in the way, I'm sorry, but I have to keep going. Right? Can you see that? That when we try to, you know, attain something, well, in a way we're putting our own self-importance over another person. And there was a very beautiful quote, I don't remember it exactly, from a Palestinian, and sorry, I don't remember the name either, but he was saying something like, if I can go ahead, but at your expense, I think I choose not to. And I think that's the decision that we have to make. Am I going to go ahead at your expense, or am I going to find a way that it's power with, that we can both move ahead? But you can see that I think many of us, we may not hold ourselves back to go ahead. What do you think? You know, it kind of, and that's why one beautiful balance Baba talks about is the balance of being intoxicated and humble. Because when we're kind of self-actualizing, it's very intoxicating. We're moving, we're achieving something, we're going ahead, we're becoming something, right? So it can be quite intoxicating. But then we lose the humility. So again, we go into this power and forget the love. So when we're going ahead, we have to, I think, keep in our awareness this balance of my power and your power. And it's not easy, is it? Try and do it. It's not, I think, that easy on a day-to-day practical level. But for me, just being aware of this helps, because I'm kind of checking, you know, and seeing how it's moving and how it's happening. Then another person that I met, a psychiatrist, and this is another example of soft power. He's one of the top psychiatrists in the whole of the north of India. He's based in Jaipur. He was like the president of the Psychiatric Association of India, you know, like very, very accomplished. I went to see him to invite him to our dialogue, and he was working in this tiny little clinic, very, you know, like I didn't quite like to go in there, and working with all these people with mental challenges, very, very people with low income. I would imagine that he probably doesn't even get paid from many of these people, and if he does, I don't think he'd take more than 100 rupees. Now, someone like that could be working for the rich. The rich have so many mental problems, right? Depression and whatever. He could be making a fortune. What's he doing sitting in this little... And how he sits there all day, you know, how he sits in this... Like, I wanted to get out of there, to be honest. I just wanted to get out of there because it was very challenging to be there. And he has a choice. This is soft power. I see so many people choosing this kind of soft power. And you know, they have in India this culture of touching someone's feet out of respect. I think he was the first one I thought, I really feel like touching his feet. But I thought, is it appropriate? I don't know. I held myself back. But that was what came from my heart, because I thought, what a choice he's made, you know? So this is, I meet many people like this, not just one. I meet many, many people who choose soft power. And so it's been, and he said to me, he said, a very good example of power, he said, the muscle is a power, but I don't know if I've got my, but within the muscle is the, what? I don't even know the word for it. But within the muscle there's the nerve. That's more powerful than the muscle. Within that there's the something. I should learn my, about the body before I say this example again. But he was saying, and behind all of that is the thought. You know, like the muscle is seen as the power, but at the root of it is the thought. And where does the thought come? From the divine, you know. And I've been also meeting, because we invite sports people as well, so I've been meeting, you know, gold medalists. One, and I met one lady who is the oldest woman to climb Mount Everest. She climbed Mount Everest when she was 35. Now she's 45 and she's done 7 out of the 10 mountains and she's still going. But you know, what is in her, you know, what is in her that she can do this? Actually, how it happened, she just took her daughter. Her daughter wanted to do some climbing, so she took her daughter, and then she got interested. Next thing, she's climbing Mount Everest. You know, but what's here that takes us on such, you know, incredible challenges? And so, you know, the power, of course, the more subtle something is, the more powerful it is. And of course, that's the soul, and beyond that, it's God. And so, you know, with this project, of course, every day I'm having conversations around power. And when I first came to Gyan, my focus was on gentleness, self-respect, love, you know, all these kind of really soft things. And one time I kind of almost got eaten. And I thought, hey, I better work on some of this power. So I was thinking at that time, how do I become powerful? What does it take to become powerful? What do you think of doing when you want to become powerful? I think most of us probably think, I have to get up at 2 o'clock every morning, then I'll be powerful. Does it work? Sometimes we get so exhausted. that all our power is gone. So, I mean, it can work. I'm not saying it doesn't. What I realized at that time, or for you, what do you think it is? How do you become powerful? What do you think of? Relax. That's another very interesting one. But just on this relax, another very interesting balance is relaxation and concentration. Usually when we relax, we can't concentrate. We don't feel like concentrating. And when we concentrate, we're not very relaxed, right? So meditation is this art of relaxation and concentration. And somebody else said something? Determination. Yeah, and that was in the Mooli, right? Determination brings success. And Mama, when she was asked, I heard, when she was asked what is the most important of all the qualities that we need to imbibe, she said determination. Because she said you can have all of the qualities, but if you don't have determination, think about it. They'll be wasted. They won't even be used. Competitiveness is power. Okay, in what way? It's also got a downside, but I know it has a good side. Yeah, there's a good side. Seeing how far we can go. When somebody achieves something, we know that we can also do it because someone's done it. In that sense, no? Yeah. Felt that the way to become powerful is really awareness. It all depends on my awareness. I can be powerful or I can be totally weak, depending on my awareness. And I just remember going to a conference when I was quite new in Gyan, very young, and I went to this UN conference in Bangkok representing the BKs. And when I went to this conference, I found it was all diplomats, professors, and me. And I didn't know anyone. And, you know, I was feeling really uncomfortable when it came to meal times. Of course, I didn't know anyone. I'd have to go up to a table and say, can I sit here? And I kind of felt, and I felt a little bit like, what am I doing here? You know, but it was the conference for the International Year of Peace, 1986. So that's how long ago it was. And so I sat in the, you know, it was like a room and everyone had a microphone. And I didn't know that I could speak. Nobody told me to prepare anything. But it was getting, you know, really boring. You know, people were talking about disarmament and, you know, all the usual kind of rhetoric that they talk about. And so I sat there and I thought, I've got to say something. I've really got to say something. And then I started to change my awareness and I thought, actually, anyone should be speaking here, it should be me. Because I've given my life to peace. I experience peace. I know what is peace. I don't think any of these people are peaceful. I don't think they know what is peace. If anyone should be speaking, I should speak. So I changed my awareness and I spoke twice. And I became, you know, when I was thinking, I don't know what I'm doing here, I don't think I should be here, I felt, and probably people were looking at me like, what are you doing here? You know, because I looked different also in a sari and, you know, probably people, and I felt that people were looking like, what are you doing here? And nobody said hello to me, you know, it was like, and after I spoke, then people would come to me and say, can I sit with you? And people were paying, putting me in a taxi, paying for the fare, and, you know, I became like the celebrity. And it was a really good experience of how it's all here. My experience is what's happening here. And that's what I'm projecting, that's how people see me, that's how I feel. And so it was a very good lesson of, you know, really just, you know, affirming that it's how I think, that's going to be how I feel, and that's how I'm going to project myself, that's how people see me, and that's how I'll behave and be. Om Shanti.